Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Every day I work with writers. The consulting work that I do really puts me in conversation with writers and creators every day. And some of what we're working on is the idea of, once you have a book, how do you really get in the hands of readers? How do you develop a platform that will help you understand who will love your book, and what are the ways you can engage that audience, really giving yourself a thriving career that doesn't only serve your book really well, but gives you an experience that you want as a writer, someone who is engaging with the world of books and with readers and other authors and things that really light you up. And how do you do that in a way that is authentic? So in the work that I do, we are building marketing strategies and book launch strategies, and we're pitching podcasts, and we're developing blogs and newsletters and so much else. But today, I want to dig into a very specific example of one person who doesn't only inspire me, but I think is an incredible model for how you follow your passion and develop your platform. Today, I want to talk about Zibby Owens. And specifically, what Zibby can teach us about what it takes to develop your platform as an author or a writer or a creator or a podcaster. If you don't know who Zibby Owens is, basically, she's just one of the top book influencers out there. I think that she's maybe most well known for her podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, and she's had a couple other podcasts that are related as well. But she is also an author. She's had some books and anthologies come out. She has a picture book coming out, I believe, and a memoir. She just launched her own publishing company, Zibby Books. They'll be publishing 12 books a year. She's a contributor to like Good Morning America and something with Katie Couric. She is, in a word, astounding. So there's a lot that I think we can learn from her. And I do want the primary message to be that I'm in awe of what she does and how she does it. It is just astounding to me, all that she does. And as just someone who observes it, what I sense in it is a just total, complete joy that she has and a really clear mission to share books and connect authors and readers together. So it's really, really neat. So this episode, a little bit, is also a reaction episode. On YouTube, there's a thing called like a reaction video, and I will be publishing the video of this on my site, WeGrowMedia.com. But Zibby was recently interviewed on one of my favorite podcasts, the hashtag MWriting podcast, with KJ Dell'Antonia, Jessica Leahy, Serena Bowen. And Jess and KJ had interviewed Zibby recently, episode 293 called How to Build a Literary Life. And this took us behind the scenes to Zibby's story. And that's a part of how I'm structuring this, is just going through the story that she shared on that episode. So I highly recommend you listen to that. I'll be referencing it constantly throughout this episode. And there's a lot in there. So we're going to dig in. If you are a creator of any sort who is thinking, oh, how do I build a platform? How do I become a writer who does this or an artist who does that? I think there is so much to learn from how Zibby does things, including how she does things in a way that makes it feel authentic, filled with joy and energy, and really doesn't just lead to success from a platform standpoint, but has truly filled her life with what she wants in life, which is books and authors and conversations and all of that great stuff. So the hashtag I'm writing podcast started off with KJ doing the introduction, and she said two really compelling things right away, you know, in the intro. So she mentioned that Zibby does a lot. We're going to go through it. But she also has four children, and they're young children, and that, yeah, she has help with the kids. And this is something that I'm never entirely sure how to address in my own podcast. But it was that idea that right away, so much of Zibby's platform is this idea of, you know, moms don't have time to. It's, you know, parents are really busy. And, you know, KJ saying that right up front is one that, like, something we're probably, you know, didn't come up a lot in the episode, but, like, when you're a parent, it's a whole job. A whole job that might not even be talked about. And that, of course, if you're going to do anything as a parent, or anything as a parent plus, having help is a part of that. She also said something that I was really surprised came up right away, and I think it's why she did it. Which she said, Zibby isn't trying to earn a living. Zibby's dad is a famous money guy. You can look him up. But, and she said this for a reason, you can't just wake up one morning and say you want to be America's biggest book influencer and whip out an Amex card and make that happen. It takes work, desire, and passion. This, again, was so surprising and refreshing to hear KJ start the episode this way, because I've had plenty of people over the last year or two mention Zibby, because, again, she's amazing. And then there'd be like a little whisper, well, you know, Dan, like, you know, she, and it'd be some version of, you know, her family has money, or her father such and such, or something like that. And it was, you know, always felt like it was being said in a largely innocent way. That is an interesting thing that human beings tend to be, you know, they tend to note. But it was so amazing to see KJ start the episode that way of saying, like, here's two things you might think right away. You know, how's she deal with all these kids, all that responsibility? And then, yeah, maybe you've heard whispers that, like, she comes from money or something about money. But you know what? Money doesn't buy this. And we're going to illustrate step by step why. And that was a really compelling way to do a podcast. So this is like one of the many things I love about the hashtag I'm writing podcast and how the hosts do that. But it also sort of spoke to sometimes the elephant in the room. And I hear this a lot from writers where it's like, oh yeah, but, you know, but so-and-so has money, or but so-and-so has access, or but so-and-so, you know, something that we, meaning you as a writer or me as a writer, don't have access to, and it becomes the excuse. And I thought that was really powerful to just address it right up front and use that as a framing in a way for the episode. So in that episode, they talked about Zibby's goals and how she always wanted to be a writer from when she was a little kid and throughout her life, and that she'd been publishing in magazines since she was 14. But that the idea that she has this very successful podcast, very successful platform, brand, as a book influencer, that was not the goal. The goal was not to be on Instagram. She wasn't on Instagram when the podcast started. Her goal was not to start a podcast at all. She joked that, this whole thing is a big accident. But it is the idea that she kind of followed opportunity after opportunity and after opportunity and kind of kept saying yes. And I think that's one of the first big lessons here, is the idea that you don't have to have a plan and you don't know where it will lead. A lot of people I talk to, whether it's an artist or a musician or a writer, they sometimes hold back on pursuing something because they're like, well, where is this going to lead to? Or fine. Let's say I do the podcast. Let's say it even does anything. How will that get me a book deal? I don't know about this. I'm giving this more thought. And they get into that like analysis paralysis because they want to see how it leads to a specific thing they want. And I think oftentimes with that as well, so many of our actions are controlled by the fact that we don't want to look, we don't want to look foolish. We don't want to look like we did something that didn't go the right place. So we delay. And she says, you know, the path to getting where she is has been windy. And then she said something interesting, which she said, oh, she's got a marketing background and she ran a crumb cake business before this. And it made me realize, oh my gosh, like, I don't really know her background. So I went on her LinkedIn. I'll try to share this on the video portion of this. So if you're watching the video, or go to wegrowmedia.com. And her LinkedIn profile is fascinating because, of course, the whole first bunch of things is her as a book influencer, which is amazing. So it's her as an author, a contributor, Good Morning America, CEO of Zibby Books, columnist for Katie Couric Media, a writer for magazines and newspapers for 25 years, because, again, she started when she's 14, is what she said. Editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time to Write, all these things, but then you kind of keep going in. I love this. Mom of four kids, self-employed, June 2007 to present. I love how that's on the LinkedIn. Her podcasts, her multiple podcasts. Then it gets into this thing. Acting CEO of, and I might be mispronouncing this, Neen's Treats, which she did for a little over a year. And I assume that that is the crumb cake company, which I think was a family business that she was helping out with. Then there was something earlier than that, marketing and blogging at Gaggle of Chicks. Then there's a ghostwriting thing. Then there's a lead part-time leader at Weight Watchers. Then there's a marketing internship in 2002, marketing associate at Unilever Prestige in 2000, a marketing manager at Idea Lab in 99, brand marketing assistant at Vegan Ellis in 1998. This is really cool. Intern at Ogilvy in 97. Intern at Presbyterian Hospital in Westchester, intern at Vanity Fair in 1995. And now, because I think that when we find someone like Zibby, who is amazing, I'm going to say that a million times in this podcast, is we start thinking that everything she does is just, you know, success, success, success. It's this straight path. And what I love is that you see this long history. And it's easy on a LinkedIn when you look back to think that there's a straight line. Well, yeah, when you start out interning for Vanity Fair, of course you end up as your own publisher 25 years later. But that's not how it feels to the person doing it. I imagine if that was 95 that she graduated college about the same time I did. I graduated college in 1995. And it's just neat to see where it was all these marketing internships, marketing assistant, all that marketing thing, and how her career had different phases to it. And there are many, many, many little things. And looking back, it's easy for us to say, oh, of course. But to her, every transition might have felt harrowing. So I love looking at that, to see that reality of someone's professional career. Okay, so back to the hashtag I'm writing podcast. She said in March of 2018, she started reading more and writing more essays. And that she got this idea from a friend, you know, oh, you should, you know, batch together some of your essays, try to sell a collection. And she said, this is 2018, she couldn't get a book deal. Why? All the reasons we hear about constantly. Nobody buys essay collections, you don't have a platform, all that kind of stuff. And KJ brought this up, which is like, it's amazing that just 3 years ago, she couldn't get a book deal. Now she has multiple book deals. She has this huge platform. But just a couple years ago, a few years ago, nope, not going to happen. And I think that that's worth noting, because I can see any of us, any normal human being, just sort of being, you know, I worked so hard on that essay collection and pitching it. And I mean, people were clear that they don't want this. You can see them giving up. You can see them turning down their volume, doing less. And again, I just want to illustrate like why I'm just so in awe of her is like, she didn't do that. She said, okay, what else can I do? So then a friend of hers said, you know what, you know, you're always talking about books and doing the, you know, sending articles to people, you should have a podcast. And she said she didn't really know much about podcasts at all. So what she did is she went home and started listening to a bunch of them, because she couldn't figure out, she didn't know a lot about them, but then she could figure out, why am I having a podcast? Then she had a bright idea, which, by the way, turned out to be a failure. I don't like to throw that word around, but I like to use it to illustrate that her first idea didn't really work. And the first idea was, I always share articles. Let me just get on the podcast and I'll read my essays out loud and I'll read articles that I wish people had time to read. And she did like, I think, one or two episodes like that, and then quickly learned, oh, wait a minute, this isn't quite legal. I can't go on and read other people's essays in their entirety that I'm not allowed to do that. Even her own essays, she might have that ability to, because she might have a deal with Huffington Post or something where she can't republish it. So that first idea, again, is like, oh, I can't do that. And again, this is a point I can see someone stopping. You know, I had a good idea, but, you know, what do I know about podcasts? And my first idea, you know, whatever. But she didn't do that. She pivoted. She said, oh, maybe if I can't do that, maybe I can interview authors. And how did she start? With a couple authors that she knew. And she's someone that, you know, she says she loves deep conversation. She was a psychology major in college. She has a marketing background. And that maybe I can build a brand around books and people behind them because I love talking to people. She said her first guest was Lee Carpenter, who was a business school classmate. So here's another thing. Start with your own network, even going back into her history of, I didn't get to the education part. So she, Harvard Business School, so Yale University. So she was doing this before. She was at Yale, Bachelor of Arts Psychology, graduate 98. So a couple years after I did, then an MBA at Harvard Business School. I mean, like I said, she's amazing. But she was, you know, reaching out to people that she knew already. And then she says this moment, and this moment I think will have two different possible reactions from you listening to this. She says, as luck would have it, my husband's dear friend from the tennis world was on FaceTime. I happened to overhear that he'd been seated next to Andre Agassi on a flight recently. So I walked over to the phone and was like, is there any way in the world that Andre Agassi would be on my podcast? Because his book, titled Open, is probably my top 10 favorite books of all time. Her friend, who she said had a relationship with Andre because he's a tennis player, a tennis star, I think, too, and is very outgoing, asked Andre, and Andre said yes. And probably because Andre had a very good and trusting friendship with that other friend. So right away, again, what I think you might be thinking, one is, there we go. She had access to someone who had influence. But I can see 99 out of 100 people, probably me included, who would be in that room, and maybe a spouse is on the phone and mentioned, oh, yeah, I was chatting with him. I'm on the flight with Andre Agassi. And even if in the back of my head I think, oh, gosh, it would be a dream to have Andre on my podcast, there's no way I'd walk across the room and say, hey, can you ask if Andre wants to be on my podcast because I love his book? And Zibby did that. And that is that enthusiasm, that mission, that passion, that risk is, again, one of the many things that I'm just in awe of what she does. And again, it's fueled by joy and of this mission. And I think that's incredible. From there, she said that she just did word of mouth marketing to try to spread the word. And she said that a lot, you know, she lived in New York. And again, that's access. You're around people. She said she lived there her whole life. But that she initially grew the podcast just through word of mouth, meaning pretty much anyone she knew either knew an author or knew someone who knew someone who knew an author. So she said, even in my our kids' preschool class, a friend of a friend knows an author. And that's how she got early guests, how she spread the word. And then some publicists found out about her, and she reacted really positively. And KJ and Jess and Zibby all talked about this in the episode, which is, boy, you should be nice to publicists. And I can see a lot of people, too, getting an email from a publicist. It might be, and they might think, I don't know, they're pitching me. They're marketing to me. I like choosing my guests. I'm going to say no to that publicist. And Zibby did the opposite. She said yes to that and to that relationship. One of the things that's always astounded me about Zibby's podcast is it's like basically a daily podcast, a daily interview. That is so much work. It is so much work. And there are points, too, where I'm like, surely she's still not doing a daily podcast. How could she? And I check, and she is. So that's also a way to solve for this. Because, again, a normal person like you or me might think, well, gosh, it's nice that these publicists are reaching out to me, but I do one episode a week, or one episode every 2 weeks, or one episode a month, and I simply can't fit in these other authors. I'm going to say no. No, thank you. have a good day. But Zibby was doing daily. And when you do daily, it opens up all kinds of new possibilities. New possibilities of saying yes. And when you say yes, that connect, that creates a professional relationship with that publicist. And you never know where that will lead. And you never know if that's what led to another big guest. Okay, so she said, you know, KJ was asking, well, how did you get listeners? Because having a guest doesn't really always bring in listeners. And Zibby seemed to agree to that. She said, you know, it took a while to get it off the ground. She tried testing marketing firms and partnerships and newsletters and doing ads. She said she wasn't really on Facebook or Instagram. When she started the podcast, she has to get on there and start accounts. So it's not like she was some social media influencer and that benefited the podcast. She was starting where we all start, which is like, oh gosh, I'm not even on Instagram. Like, what do? I just want to do a podcast. Now, hurry, I'm starting an Instagram. We all go through that. And she said something that really struck me. She said, I believe this is the quote, but you know, something like, I got pretty depressed at certain points. I was like, well, I guess this is not going to take off. And this was months after the podcast started, where you're doing this thing, you feel like, oh, I interviewed Andre Agassi. I think it was like maybe her second or third guest. I'm enjoying this, but it's not really growing. I'm not getting big feedback. I'm not getting big download numbers. And that can be something that can really demotivate you. And she did, again, because she's doing this for joy and for purpose, and she loves people and she loves authors. She just said, I'm just going to keep doing this. But she also said, I didn't sit around and wait. I started branching out quickly. So she mentions two things here that, again, were really surprising. I started having these author salons in my house. It just seemed like fun. I invited everyone I knew and interviewed an author in my living room. And again, I can see any other person thinking, well, the podcast goes out to the world. Now I'm going to do a version where it's only people I know. And I've had this conversation with writers and artists a million times where I'll say, you know, start with the people you know, friends, family, colleagues. And they say, no, no, no. The whole point is I want people I don't know to read my book or to know about my book. I want those other people, my friends and family, they don't care about this, or the goal is to extend beyond that, right? And yeah, that's a good point. That is the ultimate goal. But often where people start is with people they know, and they get good at communicating and building a community and building engagement. So I love hearing that she did it in her living room. She didn't have to rent out a space, and that she just brought people she knew. And the second thing she said was that she started doing these book fairs. She invited every author she interviewed into her home, and then she sold their books. She said she had a bookstore come in, and they sold books. And she did these things offline that would help the online podcast. And she just really illustrated that in-person connections really helped. And she kept saying yes to opportunities. She also said that because of her marketing background, she made this a brand from day one. She made a logo and a tagline. She made sure all the messaging was consistent. And that she wanted to take doing this really seriously. It's another point that is easy for me to say. It's hard for any person to take that advice. Because a lot of people, they worry about expectation. They worry about failures. They half make it. Oh, I'll do a monthly podcast and it'll just be this. And I don't want to complicate. I don't overwhelm myself. So they kind of say no, 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 no. For very good and logical reasons. But it's so fascinating to see how she said yes. Of like, I am going to take it seriously. I'm going to make a brand. I'm going to work my messaging out. I'm going to make brand guidelines like I would have at Ogilvy 20 years ago. I am going to bring people together in my home. I am going to do this. I am going to do that. I am going to say yes to publicists. Do we know which of these things led to success? No, we don't. But we know that doing all of these things led to success. And she mentioned that she has to be efficient with her time, that she moves really quickly, really out of necessity. Yeah, she's probably baked that way. That's kind of how she is just naturally. But when you're doing so much, I mean, you almost have to do that. She said she wakes up early around 5 a.m., starts her day with an Instagram post, and she considers that writing, which I think is another good thing to mention. A lot of people I've talked to say, well, yeah, I'd update social media, but that's not real writing. Or, but then how do I figure out the writing? And her just saying, you know what? If I'm writing something on social media, I'm writing words. I'm going to count that as writing. KJ and Jess asked about her daily life. She said, yeah, she drops off the kids in the morning, picks them up at 3 o'clock. So between 9 and 3, she said, every day is insane. Podcast after podcast after podcast, meetings, team stuff. And recording an episode of a podcast is a lot of work. I'm recording this right now. I can feel my passion and excitement and in my head trying not to forget. And I'm reading off of notes. And it's going to suck a lot of energy out of me because I love doing it. But she seems to do 1 or 2 or 3 a day, potentially. I don't even know. And I want to note that that's a lot of work. All the setup that her team is doing, even if she just walks in cold, which I do not think that she does, it is so much energy. And she does that in between the whole morning thing, writing in the morning, all the family stuff, and then, you know, picking up the kids and kind of doing her day. I think she'd said some phrase like, at 3 o'clock, then I figure out what we're going to do that day. And it's like, I'm an early riser. I love waking up early. So for me to be up at 4, 4:35 is just an everyday normal thing. I love that. At 3 o'clock, though, I'm kind of winding down, if I'm honest. So again, I look at Zibby in just total awe of how much she does and how much is fueled with joy and passion and mission. She says she reads at night. And they asked, well, how do you have time to write? And this is a question constantly I'm talking to writers about, or artists. Where do I find the time to do that work? And she says, goes back to how they started, where she says every other weekend she drops off her kids. She's divorced and remarried. So she said every other weekend she drops off her kids on Thursday night and picks them up on Tuesday. And that's where she gets an unbelievable amount of work done. And she said that her memoir is mostly written in the mornings between 5 a.m. and 10 a.m. So she's an early riser. She mentioned that her husband sleeps in a bit more than her, so that she takes this time where she can get it. And she's using partly her natural inclination, and then she's having to work around really serious responsibilities. And every single one of you listening has really, really serious responsibilities that you are juggling and probably always feeling like you're never quite making ends meet, that you're always not quite doing what you want. And what I love about the honesty of this conversation is how, even with that, how do we find opportunity to create in a way that matters? They even, Jess and KJ and Zibby talked too about how, like, oh, for writing, they love to do it on the couch. And it was so refreshing to hear that. I think that there's a lot of pressure that we can feel as someone who writes or creates that I need to be, like, I mean, I'm recording this. If you're watching the video, I'm at a desk with a nice office chair in a private studio with a door that is locked. And we think, well, if I'm going to be a writer, I have to have a desk and I have to have this and I have to have that. And I love when you find these successful authors saying, oh my gosh, I love writing in bed, I love writing on the couch, realizing there are no rules here. Do what makes sense for you. They then talked about how she started Zibby Books, her new publishing company. And this was really neat. They asked, Jess had asked, like, how long was this kept a secret? And she said, I started it a year ago. So we're talking December of 2020. And at the last minute, I slammed the brakes, decided not to do it. Then in July, decided it was time, and she reached out to her partner and her team with that. She built a team. She said, by September 13th, we had announced the company, staffed it up, and acquired 7 books. I move really quickly with everything. And now we have more than a year before the first book comes out, giving us time to do partnerships, all that. We'll talk about in a minute. And I think that's important too. A year ago, she had the idea. She did the logo and she said no. She stopped it. And that even people who look very successful and they're always fast moving and they're always great, they too will start and stop with ideas because they're not right at the time or whatever. It's always worth noting that. And then two, of how quickly she staffed up and said yes to things and acquired books. They mentioned they're working on partnerships and their book ambassador program. And I was like, what's that? So I go to the website, Zibby Books, and sure enough, there's become a book ambassador. And I'm like, oh. And I signed up for it, and they basically, it was a little form, and they said, hey, help spread the word when where books come out. Let us know what your local bookstore is. And it was something like, we'll send you an early copy of each of the books for free. And we want to build a community where you can talk with other people. So that seemed really neat, even just from a marketing standpoint of like, I want to see how this works. And of course, I'm really enthusiastic about her mission and her energy. So I'm like, oh yeah, this seems like fun. That word has come up a lot in this little podcast. And they bring you into a Facebook group. And it was interesting. I don't know what I expected, but she's one of the top book influencers out there. This is a brand new publishing company. How many people do you think had joined the ambassador program so far? Do you have a number? The number was, I think the 89th person, including the admin, to join the Facebook group. Again, it's a year out. I don't know how much she's publicized that program. Maybe some people have joined it, but they don't like Facebook. Maybe there's really 400 people in there, but 300 have not wanted to join the Facebook group. I don't know. It's always interesting for me to see the conversion rate, though, because it's so easy to assume a year from now, when her ambassador program has 5,000 people, and an average person might say, well, of course it does. Everything she does is successful. That person won't realize that, yeah, but when they launched it, there was 20 people signed up. Then 39, then 68, then 89, then 104. It builds really slowly. It builds over time. And one other thing I want to talk about, and this is something I've been watching for a while, and I think is worth talking about. It's the same thing. So on November 2nd, she released her most recent book, Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids, a Timeless Anthology. So it's 52 short essays for busy people by 49 amazing authors. And a lot of these other authors are well-known, and they have platforms of their own, including KJ Delantonio. And so in this episode, I've talked again and again how Zibby is like one of the top book influencers out there. I'm recording this on December 15th. We are a month and a half since that book came out. How well do you think it did on the Amazon charts? How many reviews do you think it has on Amazon? A month after it came out, nearly 50 authors, 49 authors, and Zibby having the platform that she does. And I'm sure she's talked about this left, right, and center. So I've watched this. As of right now, it has 29 ratings. So 29 reviews on Amazon. And I'm not going to lie, that number is a little surprising to me, knowing how big her platform is, how many authors there are, how her entire platform is about this topic. Her entire platform is readers and writers. It would be so logical for any of us to think, well, gosh, even if Zibby alone was the author, you know, how many followers does she have? How big is her platform? She's on Katie Couric. She's on Good Morning America. She's all this sort of stuff. You know, you would expect, or not expect, but you would not be wrong to assume maybe it's 100, 200, 300, just making up a number. Even if you just logically multiply out 49 authors, gosh, even if all of them review the book or all of them share it with one friend, like that's right there, it's 100 reviews. And yet it's 29 ratings. And it's a good reminder, not that I'm trying to put expectation on her or this book. I'm not trying to add judgment to it. It's the idea that if you released a book a month ago and you had 29 ratings, you might think, that's amazing, which is what you should think. But you might think, oh, I don't know, I was hoping for more. What did I do wrong, quote unquote? And I hear that fairly frequently from people. You know, I did a thing, it didn't do great. What did I do wrong? You did nothing wrong. Zibby's doing everything right. She's putting more energy into this than I can possibly imagine exists in the universe. And I was also watching the And this book has amazing blurbs as well. I mean, just, she's incredible. I kept checking the bestseller rankings on Amazon. I never saw it go any higher than number 4 in the parenting category. And even that was like a blip. It was like a day or two that I saw. It never sort of hit, you know, the top 10 books overall or that sort of thing. And again, I am not trying to add any judgment to this whatsoever. But I only bring it up because I think it's so easy for us to see someone like Zibby who is successful and give excuses to, oh, well, she's successful because of this. Or everything she does, when her memoir comes out or a children's book or maybe 9 books from now, and one of them does astronomically well, and we think, huh, of course it did well. It did Zibby. It's Zibby. It's she did it. I think it's so worthwhile to look specifically at all of what she does and find something that did good. This book has done really good. But it wasn't this sort of thing where instantly she had 1,000 reviews and instantly it was the top of the bestseller list. And that this work is incremental. And some things do good. Some things do amazing. Some things... And I just want to encourage you to temper your own expectation. I had framed a lot of this episode as what we can learn from Zibby Owens about establishing your own platform as a writer or a creator. And this is one thing to keep in mind. When things aren't working out right away, whether it's the podcast or something else, or when you have to change this idea, that is the work. And one of the many reasons I'm so inspired by, so in awe of Zibby and what she does, is that she brings this positive energy and that she just kind of keeps going. And her original goal was to be a writer. Yet here she is doing all these other things because she's just following that passion. So I said her name 1,000 times. Google Zibby Owens. You'll find her podcast, her publishing company, her website, her social media, all the good stuff. Definitely go and check out the hashtag I'm writing podcast episode. Just again, Google hashtag I'm writing podcast and you'll find the episode 293, How to Build a Literary Life. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me at wegrowmedia.com. You can find the video of this episode there. Just click on the podcast tab. You can find me on social media at Dan Blank. I love hearing from listeners. Let me know what you learned from this episode and ideas you have for future episodes. Thank you so much for listening until the end.